All right. Hello, everyone. Good to see you. So we are here for Bernadette Roberts, and right now I am working from the book, What is the Self? And what I want to do, I think, is maybe just review a couple of things from last week and then just dive right in and just continue. One thing that I really remember that I want to review is the first couple of sentences that we opened with, because I think they were really important. I remember when she talks about the true nature of the self here, what she's saying is the true nature of the ego self, or the true nature of the false self, or even the true nature of consciousness. Looking from the point of view of the absolute, it's seeing kind of down and being able to see the true nature of what came before the realization of the absolute. So it's kind of looking back. She says, no one knows the true nature of self as long as he is living it, or is it? The true nature of self can be disclosed only when it falls away and becomes known in retrospect by its absence, or what was. So she's saying you can't really fully know it until it's gone and you're looking back on it. And I mentioned last week that, you know, we have a saying, hindsight is 20/20. And it's really that same sort of thing. I had a similar experience recently that I'll share. Some of you may know that about, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, Cheryl and I were walking down the street and a lady stopped and asked if either of us were interested in purchasing her house in La Vida. And we went and looked at her house, and her house was, you could call it my dream house in a lot of ways, a lot of things about it. First of all, it was in La Vida, which is a town where I've wanted to live for probably since I first saw it in 2013, but even long before that, before I ever saw La Vida, since the time that I was around 28 years old, I wanted to live in this part of Colorado. Wanted to live on like a farm or a ranch. I've also always loved master bedrooms that are like upstairs, almost taking up the whole upstairs floor. My mom reminded me this week that even her house has that kind of an upstairs bedroom, which she doesn't use because she doesn't like to go upstairs. She said when she built her house and I walked up there, the first thing I said is, I could live up here. So I've always loved this upstairs bedroom kind of thing. This house just had all of that. It had that, you know, the master bedroom would have been upstairs, which would have been my bedroom. The views were incredible. It was a little 2-acre farm with a little pasture. The garage looked like a barn. I really loved it. And when I first showed it to my mom, she got all excited about it and appeared interested in buying it. Which really, you know, it was like all my dreams were coming true. It was really exciting that this lady stopped and asked me if I wanted this place, and then my mom was willing to buy it for me. Of course, she would have stayed downstairs in a bedroom, but it was all very exciting. But at some point, Ron showed some disappointment. And when he showed some disappointment, at that point, I paused and looked within. And mom was also concerned about Ron's disappointment. She said she didn't want to ruin our relationship. And he was disappointed because he wants to retire in a year, and suddenly he thought I would be spending all my time at this little dream house in La Vida, and that's not where he wants to be. So, you know, it didn't go along with his visions. So at that point, I went within, and I was guided to let it go, which I did. And just to be absolutely honest, when the lady wrote to me on Monday morning asking if we wanted it, and I told her no, that we didn't, after I sent that email, I cried for half an hour. So this was a big deal for me. But after I finished crying, I felt guided to open A Course in Miracles to a page, which is a page where I had written down my first spiritual aspiration. I didn't even know what was on that page in A Course in Miracles, but I was guided to open up to where I had written my first spiritual aspiration. So I opened it up and I read that page, and it was about distorted miracle principles. And as I read that page, I understood that the calling is to awaken to the true heaven, which is to awaken to the absolute. And the distorted miracle principle was to have this perfect little farm in La Vida. And I understood that by listening to that guidance to let that go, and also by following through, by completely letting the dream go, I was letting go of a distortion of a true miracle principle, which then would allow me to follow the true miracle calling. Well, the interesting thing is, last week, my mom decided to look at a different house in La Vida. And we went and looked at that on Friday morning at 10. And she loved this house, and it's a beautiful house. She loved this house. By Friday afternoon at 2 p.m., she was under contract. So she's buying this house. And it's I got to tell you, first of all, I have to tell you, it's a beautiful home. And it also has really nice views. And but the funny thing is, for me, there's this neutrality in me that I can't, it's like where there used to be this desire from the time I was 28 years old and first saw Southern Colorado with my eyeballs, where there used to be this desire, there's just space. And it's kind of funny because my mom has asked me 3 or 4 times, even since being under contract, she says, are you okay with this? Because she can sense that I don't have the excitement that one would have if they were getting their dream come true. I'm like, yeah, sure, of course. And I do think it's absolutely perfect for her. But something in me, this desire died when I let it go. 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. And so it's just not there. And so this is just happening. But the reason I'm bringing this up now is she's talking about how you can't really know the ego, or you can't really know consciousness until it falls away and you look back on it. And I'm noticing that that's true of desire. What I see now that I never fully saw. I mean, once you see something, you realize it was always there, and you always realize that to some degree you were aware of it, but you denied it at the same time. So it's kind of like seeing it and not seeing it simultaneously. But what I'm realizing is that in desire, when you desire something because you think it will make you happy, there's actually a sense of desperation in there. And you could say that I can see now how yucky desire is. And, 8 weeks ago, I wouldn't have said that desire is yucky. And probably most people still would not say desire is yucky. And that's because there's a crazy, desperate belief that I need my desires in order to be happy. And when people think they need their desires in order to be happy, they need them achieved, they don't see them as yucky. They see them as salvation. But once that type of desire falls away, you see the desperation in it, and it's actually kind of a sickening, yucky thing. So the reason I'm bringing this story up is because I totally understand what she means by you can't totally see something till it falls away. Right? Hindsight is 20/20. And I am very happy for my mom, but like I said, it's not like my dream is coming true. You know, I told Jacqueline, some people say that sometimes when you let go of something, the universe gives it to you anyway. And like at the level of form, it looks that way. You know, like I just let go of this other house 6 weeks or so ago, and now there's another house being handed in. You know, she'll live in there too, but you know, I'll have a bedroom there, and my name is going to be on the deed along with her name, with rights of survivorship. So it appears that the universe is giving me what I let go of. But the reason I say appear is because it doesn't feel that way. I don't know how to describe the feeling. The feeling is that I let go to the degree that to say I want it and the universe is giving me now what I want doesn't sound true. If that makes any sense, right? How can you say you let go and then turn around and say it's giving me what I wanted? You know? So there's this spaciousness now where this desire used to be. Spaciousness. And my mom is through the roof happy. In fact, Shauna had lunch with her the other day. So Shauna, you probably saw that, huh? She's through the roof happy about this. And I'm happy to see her happy, you know, and I'm happy to support her in this. And, you know, there's nothing I'm unhappy about. It's just there's a spaciousness here that would be happy no matter what. And it doesn't see this as a special event. So I understand what she means when she says you can't see it until it falls away. So it'll be interesting as the ego falls away to look back on the ego and to see it with clarity. And it will be interesting as consciousness falls away to look back at consciousness and see it with clarity. I think probably another thing I want to review is how she defines consciousness. Because consciousness is a word that, you know, before I taught this last week, I went and spent an hour or so researching consciousness to see if I could find a definition of consciousness that everybody agreed on. And I couldn't. You know, like I found a number of different definitions of consciousness. And I found out that there are so many opinions on what consciousness is that really the only genuine thing we can say about consciousness is that it's a mystery and that there is no consistent definition. So when she talks about consciousness, she's talking about that sense that I exist. Or what Nisargadatta calls I am. That's consciousness. And interestingly, she says animals do not have that sense. And I just think that's incredibly interesting that we may have some sense of I exist that animals don't have. As she says, what animals have is pure sensory knowledge. And she says that also when our sense I exist or our I am consciousness falls away, we will also have pure sensory knowing. And I guess that's all I want to say about that at this point. Let me read what I left off with last week. She says, for the most part, it rarely occurs to anyone that the human sensory system can function without consciousness or without that sense, I exist. Usually people believe it is the other way around, namely that consciousness can function without the senses. Man, like the animal, can function without consciousness. But neither man nor animal can function without the senses. Again, I've had a lot of fun contemplating this week. Right now, a bear came to mind, for example. You know, bears have noses like dogs. They sniff a lot. Sniffing is very important to them. So, you know, if we just take that one sense, you know, that their smell sense is very, very strong. And they couldn't survive without that smell sense. They wouldn't know when food was near, and they wouldn't know when danger was approaching. They use that smell sense for both. It's really an important part of their survival. But what about the statement that they may not have this consciousness that we have, this sense of I am that we have. You know, I've just had a lot of fun this week contemplating that with dogs and with bears and with bugs and with, you know, I can't say that I know for a fact they don't have that sense, but I see something in me beginning to accept a form of existence without that I am-ness. Without that sense that I exist, like something in me is shifting to accepting that as a possibility in this last week of contemplation. So she says, man, like the animal, can function without consciousness, but neither man nor animal can function without the senses. The senses have their own way of knowing and partake of a dimension of existence not available to consciousness. Woo! I mean, woo! That sentence blows me away. Like if we had this pure sensory knowing, we'd be aware of things we aren't aware of now. And you may remember last week I told the story about the little girl on the elephant, the baby elephant in Thailand. When the tidal wave was coming, but no human yet knew that it was coming. And this baby elephant didn't know and kept trying to run away. And of course, the owner, now again, the owner had this very self-centered I am presence with a purpose, right? His purpose was to make money, take this little girl on an elephant ride, return her to her parents, which isn't a bad purpose, but you know, that's self-centered, right? Like, this is who I am. This is my job. This is what I'm doing. And that would close him off, possibly, to anything outside of that little self-centered way of seeing and thinking. So every time the baby elephant tried to take off, he would pull it back. And the baby elephant would try to take off, and he would pull it back. And finally, the baby elephant broke away and ran to higher ground, and the tidal wave came, and the baby elephant and the little girl survived. But the human was so stuck on who I am and what I'm to do and all of that, that the human had no awareness of a tidal wave coming. Imagine that our sense, I exist, our sense, I am, is the veil that hides truth from us. So again, she says, the senses have their own way of knowing and partake of a dimension of existence not available to consciousness. And so now, after that review, we'll move into some, wow, that was an 18-minute review. We'll move into something new. She says, once consciousness falls away, sensory knowing turns out to be quite different from what we had previously believed it to be. Where we thought the senses had been responsible for discriminating the particular and the singular, and believed that consciousness and the intellect, I don't know this word. I'm going to have to look this word up. I don't know it. Let's see. I'm going to say it's posited maybe, but I don't know it, so let's look it up. Posited, and it assumes as a fact and puts forward as the basis of argument. Assumes as a fact and puts forward as the basis of argument. So, where we thought the senses had been responsible for discriminating the particular and the singular, and believed that consciousness and the intellect posited the universal or the whole, so consciousness and the intellect knew the whole. So what she's saying here, what she's saying here is that we blame the senses for the site of separation. And we think that consciousness is what is going to give us the unity experience, right? That's what she's saying. where we thought the senses had been responsible for discriminating the particular and the singular, and believed that consciousness and the intellect posited the universal or whole, it turns out to be the other way around. The senses do not know and cannot focus on the particular or singular. It is nowhere in their power to do so. Consciousness alone has this focusing and discriminating power. Thus, by themselves, the senses cannot discriminate the singular or particular, and without the singular, there is no plural, no parts and wholes, no one and the many. So we've played this game before in Gentle Healing, where I've asked you to kind of look at, you know, look at whatever's in front of you, like you're looking at a photograph. For example, I see a love seat and a table and a coaster and a petrified tree and a picture of Jasmine, a picture of Jasmine. But what she's saying is it's the mind that labels these things, and it's the consciousness of I am that sees myself as the subject that sees these things as objects. It's not the senses. You know, and I've asked you before to look at the things in front of you as if you're looking at one picture. Like if I hold you, I don't have a picture. I don't have a picture nearby, but well, here's a coaster with a picture on it. So if I show you a picture, you know, you can look at this picture and you can see a moon and stars and a pueblo, and maybe that's a fence down there. I don't know what it is. Or you can just see one picture, right? And she's saying that it's the mind and consciousness that divides this into moon and sky and stars and pueblo and fence, not the senses. The senses just see and just hear and just taste and just feel and just smell. But the mind and consciousness are what divide. The mind divides into very specifics, and the consciousness divides into I am the subject and the object. She says, whatever is to be known is simply there. That's the senses point of view. Whatever is to be known is simply there. The senses merely apprehend what is with none of the distinctions, discriminations, and labeling that are so indicative of the function of consciousness. As it turns out then, consciousness is a discriminator, discriminating the particular and the multiple, the knower and the known, the subject and the object. Its dimension is entirely relative, while the senses are non-discriminating and non-relative, knowing neither parts nor whole. Also, pure sensory knowing is neither a different type of consciousness nor a different level of the same. Rather, it is a totally different system. I'm just going to unplug my laptop. Now I can still talk to y'all without being plugged in. Did you guys hear the thunder? Okay, so I'm unplugged now. So also, pure sensory knowing is neither a different type of consciousness nor a different level of the same. Rather, it is a totally different system or way of knowing, virtually a different dimension of existence. Pure sensory knowing bears no resemblance to the knowing, experiencing dimension of consciousness. Now, again, at one level, I can't understand what she's saying because I'm not there. But at another level, based on this experience I recently told you about with desire falling away, I do understand. Because there was this great sense in me that as I was explaining to you how there was just this spaciousness where desire used to be, you know, and I'm, again, pointing right here because you feel desire kind of in this area when you really want something. And now there's just this spaciousness, this, you know, and I don't know what other word to use. I understand that you can't really understand if desire still exists in you. You know, I can tell you, and you can imagine what I'm talking about, but until desire dies in you and you feel the same spaciousness where desire was, you can't understand because it's so different from desire. I mean, up until 6 weeks ago, I had desire just like every other human does. You know, some desires had fallen away, so you could say there was a lessening of desire. But this big desire at least remained. And, you know, I told Mom thinks it's so funny that somebody stopped us on the road and offered us a house. She goes, that just sounds like God to me. She goes, that somebody would stop you on a road and offer you a house while you're taking a walk. And I said, Mom, it was God. And I said, but it wasn't God saying we should buy the house. It was God offering me all my dreams come true so that I could taste it, smell it. It was right there. And then let it go and let that desire die. It was God, but it, you know, it had a different purpose. But again, until that happens, you can't understand the positive whole. Positive is even a bad word because it's not positive or negative. You know what I mean? It's a space. But the reason I use the word positive whole is it's not like a sense of lack. It's not that kind of a whole, right? It's a whole. It's a nothing where something was. And I think she's just talking about a bigger whole, right? A bigger whole. And we imagine holes as bad. We imagine holes as lack, but it's not. She says, man derives an unconscious, subjective sense of physical form or experiences him as a discrete, separate entity or being. And we know this is true. This is the I am consciousness. We experience ourselves as the subject of everything, right? And the more you practice awareness, watching awareness, which is really bringing you in touch with that I am sense, that subject sense, and that's what it's doing. The more you see that's true. I mean, when I'm practicing awareness, watching awareness, and I come to where there's just spaciousness, I'm still noticing that I see the spaciousness. There's still a subject there, right? And that's what she's saying, is that humans experience this subjective sense. Man derives an unconscious, subjective sense of physical form, or experience himself as a discrete, separate entity or being. In the absence of consciousness, so when that whole arrives, in the absence of consciousness, however, the experience and awareness of physical form dissolves, resulting in the unusual experience of bodilessness, no body, bodilessness, a condition to which man would have to acclimate if consciousness were to permanently fall away. And of course, those of you who are in Gentle Healing Year 3, you know we're reading a lot about the body does not exist at all. Of course, a miracle says the body does not exist at all. She's saying that the body, in effect, comes from this subjective form of I am. You know, I am, and then there's I am the body comes next. Same thing with I am, and then I am bad comes next. I am, and then I am afraid comes next. So when the I am falls away, all of those extensions onto the I am fall away too. Right? They all fall away. I have one more paragraph, so I will read that, and then if it's deep, we'll come back and look at it next week. She says, thus, when we have occasion to say that form is void, meaning, again, it's nothing, we are not speaking from the experience of consciousness and its way of knowing. Rather, this statement is made first of all from the experience of pure sensory knowing. Then ultimately, when we have realized that void is absolute, this statement is made from the perspective of absolute knowing. For now, however, we wish only to emphasize that for mankind, sensory knowing, as it lies beyond consciousness, is not the same as the animal's sensory knowing. So she's been using the animals as an example, and she wants to point out that actually there's a difference between how they know and how we will know when consciousness falls away. It's not like we're going to go back to being like animals. She says, again, we wish only to emphasize that for mankind, sensory knowing as it lies beyond consciousness is not the same as the animal's sensory knowing. The movement beyond consciousness is a forward step for man, not a backward step into the animal dimension of existence. Our human passage to the divine is an irreversible forward movement. It cannot reverse itself or move backwards to any lesser dimension of existence. So it's, you know, if you think of evolution, you know, evolving, you know, they say that, you know, there was some kind of an ape-like creature that evolved into human. She's saying we aren't going to go back to being like the ape-like creature. We're going to go forward in our evolution. And that's it. That's the conclusion for today. Thanks for, I know I didn't ask, but I know, Shauna, you're okay that I took the extra couple minutes to finish the paragraph. So thank you. And next week, I'm going to bring Bernadette with me and let her explain what we've just read to you herself. Bye.